Hello and welcome to your talking newspaper for St Albans, Harpenden and the surrounding area. I'm Bill and I apologise for my rather rough voice. I'm recovering from a cold. This is the Red Saturn programme for Saturday, November the 16th, 2024. I do hope you're all well, or at least better than I've been. The music this week is a medley of Irish tunes by a Canadian group known as Searson. Two sisters, Erin and Colleen Searson, from the Ottawa Valley in Ontario. The track is called Bright Nights, and they've kindly allowed us to use it on Talking News. As usual, I'll play it in full at the end of the programme. This week, as always, we start with the news stories from the Hearts Advertiser. This will be followed by the radio listings and the audio described TV listings. 10 Today is up next, our series of gentle exercise routines to help keep you moving at home. Then we have our Events This Week in History item, which will be followed by some famous birthdays. Sounds of Nature, provided to us by the Wildlife Sound Recording Society, is next, where we hear the unusual sounds of the corncrake. Then we have an interesting story from the Hearts Life Archive, beautifully read by Lucy, about the Knights Templar and their considerable influence in Hertfordshire during the 12th and 13th centuries. We start with the news, and our readers this week are Liz, Sarah, Elizabeth and Caroline.
Hello, I'm Caroline. Our first story today is Revised Parking Plans for Parking Fees Revealed, Changes to Proposed Charges Following Concerns. Revised proposals for car parking changes at some limited waiting bays in Harpenden and St Albans have been published by the District Council. St Albans City and District Council have confirmed fresh changes in response to the views of residents, businesses and other organisations, including Harpenden Town Council, that were aired in a public consultation. Councillor Helen Campbell, Chair of the Council's Public Realm Committee and Lead for Car Parking, said, "The original proposals generated considerable interest and debate, particularly in Harpenden. We have listened carefully to those people's concerns, including those expressed in a petition and met with Harpenden Town Council. The original proposals included a charge of £2.50 an hour for a maximum two-hour stay and two free parking sessions of up to 20 minutes each per vehicle per day. Five revisions to the proposals have now been put forward. Number one, restrictions to start from 9 a.m. rather than 8:30 a.m. in Harpenden to ensure there is minimal impact on the morning school runs there. Number two, the two 20-minute free parking sessions to be replaced with one 30-minute free parking session. Three, charging periods to be made available in blocks of 30 minutes rather than one-hour long sessions to reduce the potential cost of brief stops. It means the charge for a one-hour stay, including the free period, would be £1.25, while the maximum two-hour cost would be £3.75, including the free period. 4. No changes to be introduced at bays in York Road in St Albans until a wider review of parking in the area takes place. 5. Limited waiting bays in Leighton Green in Harpenden to be converted into resident parking bays for the benefit of local households. There will be no charge for parking outside the hours during which restrictions apply at the bays, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. in Harpenden, and reflecting different local conditions, 8:30 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. in St Albans. We know that some people would prefer to retain the current system of no charge at all for a full 2 hours, but we hope they can understand that is not sustainable in the current financial climate," Councillor Campbell added. The councillor highlighted that parking accumulated losses of around £1.5 million over the past 4 years, suggesting that cannot continue at a time when local authority budgets are under so much pressure. The community will be given the opportunity to air their views during a 21-day period, which started on Thursday, November the 7th.
Hello, I'm Sarah. The pub is back on the map. Family Mark first year in charge of hair and hands. A family is celebrating a year of success since reopening a St Albans boozer, hoping that they've put the pub back on the map. Couple Paul and Julie Jones, along with daughters Gabby and Izzy and dog Jay, took on the challenge of opening their first ever pub last year at the Hare and Hounds, which required some TLC. Since reopening on November the 3rd last year, co-landlord Paul, aged 50, described the success that they've enjoyed while in a co-partnership with the Stonegate Group. "It's been a successful year. We had lots of doubters at the time, as it had been neglected for several years. But the place is back on the map. With our joint partnership, we have recreated the venue as a hotspot for people of all ages." The landlord believes they've turned around the Hare and Hound's previous reputation as an old man's pub, particularly in the toilets. "We have reinvented the place and given it a feminine touch," Paul said. "It all starts with the toilets. You'd be surprised how many customers remark about them." Earlier this month, to mark a year since the Sopwell Lane pub reopened, the Jones family hosted a celebratory night featuring music from Katie plus Juan and free Prosecco upon arrival. Paul said, "It's a celebration for what we've done. We wouldn't have achieved anything without you guys, the customers. You believed in us when we started. We had a vision and we've done it." He also highlighted the hard work of their well-trained staff in keeping the show running. In the future, the family hope to continue their current success and fund a redeveloped garden space for the hotter months. Plans include a new children's play area to welcome families. "No matter who you are, we want to cater for everyone," Paul added. "This whole year has been a learning curve, and we know we can do better."
Hi, this is Liz. My first recording today is entitled "Homebase Store at Risk Again." Homebase is said to be on the brink of collapse, putting the St Albans store at risk. The DIY and garden chain is set to go into administration due to financial problems, according to reports. After reopening in 2020, the Hatfield Road store is now in trouble again, with job cuts and further shop closures likely. Over the summer, it's emerged that Homebase owner Hilco Capital, which took control of the chain in 2018, was due to initiate a formal process to sell the chain, with The Range making an offer to purchase the retailer. But the talks didn't lead to a sale. This is not the first time. Homebase has been on the brink, as in 2018. It went through a company voluntary arrangement, CVA, and closed over 100 stores and 1,500 job losses, including the Abbeyview Retail Park and Hatfield Road stores. The news comes after the St Albans branch has made multiple applications for new advertisement signage at the front of the Hatfield Road Industrial Park. These have all been refused.
Remembrance services for fallen heroes. Over the weekend, there were touching Remembrance Day services across St Albans and Harpenden. On Sunday, a city centre procession to the war memorial took place in St Albans, followed by 2 minutes' silence at 11 o'clock. Following this, spokespeople from a variety of faiths spoke to a large crowd of onlookers in front of the St Albans memorial. Hymns were sung and prayers were read, to be concluded by the laying of the wreaths from representatives of the armed forces. Similarly, the Harpenden parade was conducted on Sunday. The procession began at the entrance to Rothamsted Park and set off at around 10:35, making its way up the High Street to Church Green for 10:50 a.m. when the service began.
RAF veteran, aged 106, marks armistice. Ray's special Remembrance Day service. A 106-year-old World War II veteran was honoured at a Harpenden care home on Armistice Day as he remembers his illustrious RAF career. The team at Willow Court were proud to honour World War II veteran Raymond Ray Coolidge during their Remembrance Day service. At 106 years of age, Ray is believed to be one of the few surviving World War II pilots in the world, which is an ongoing investigation for the RAF Association. Following the service and a well-deserved glass of wine, Ray told the Hearts advertiser, "I'm not sure how I have made it to 106, but God has been with me every step of the way. The truth is, I wouldn't have minded passing away a few years ago, but now I want to live forever. I have no regrets and continue to celebrate and enjoy life to this day." Ray served in the RAF for 38 years, retiring in 1975. During his service, he flew over 40 different aircraft and landed at more than 200 airfields. In his personal life, Ray met his wife while he was in Carlisle City Hospital as she nursed him back to health. Together, they had two sons. "I miss my wife greatly, and I love her now more than I ever did," Ray added. Recently, the former fighter pilot gave a two-hour interview at the RAF Museum in Hendon, where his story, along with the sacrifices of many others, is now preserved in the museum's archives for posterity. In a touching display of friendship, he was joined at the museum by his best friend and neighbour, Norman, also a resident of Willow Court, who is 103 years old. During the war, Norman worked in the design and construction of pistons for submarines and aircraft engines, including the Rolls-Royce Merlin engines used in the Spitfire aircraft that Mr. C flew. The 103-year-old also served as a member of the Home Guard, supporting the British Army. Both were unable to reveal their secret to living long and healthy lives, but a piece of advice echoed by the two was to enjoy it. They said, "No matter what you do, just enjoy it. And if you're not, leave and pursue what does make you happy." "We're not sure how we've lived this long. Maybe our weekly glasses of wine help," they added. On Monday, a special service was brought to Willow Court, as recent health complications have prevented Ray and Norman from their normal practice of laying the wreath.
Tenants move into new social housing. 8 tenants have moved into new social housing site as part of a £64 million project in St Albans city centre. Councillor Jackie Taylor, St Albans City and District Council's lead for housing, welcomed some of the tenants to their new homes at the new Jubilee Square development. She met with Sheila Dawson-Papa, one of 8 tenants who are moving from ageing Telford Court, which is being decommissioned. Councillor Taylor viewed Sheila's two-bedroom flat in Francis Bacon House, one of Jubilee Square's two landmark buildings. Sheila told her, "I am loving it here. It's really great. It's so comfortable. I have a fabulous balcony and I'm just a short walk away from the shops. The move from Telford Court couldn't have been smoother. The removal people were wonderful and they've now become my friends." In August of this year, the District Council announced the completion of the £64 million Jubilee Square regeneration, which aims to redevelop a rundown area of the city on the site of the former police station and NHS clinic. Watford Community Housing purchased all of the development's 93 much-needed new homes. Of these, 33 are social rent properties, which have been allocated to people on the council's social housing register. The other 60 are being sold on a shared ownership basis to help young people and key workers get on the property ladder. A new walkway linking Victoria Street and Civic Close is part of the development, along with public gardens, on the site of a former Quaker burial ground. There is also 5,000 square metres of commercial space, the equivalent of 10 full-sized basketball courts, which is available for rent. Discussions with prospective commercial tenants have been taking place. Councillor Taylor said, Jubilee Square was a highly ambitious project for a council of our size to undertake, and we had to deal with the impact of unexpected events such as the pandemic, changes to building regulations and soaring inflation. However, seeing people like Sheila settle into their new homes makes all that effort worthwhile. I'm thrilled she's so happy with her new flat, which has been finished to a very high standard.
Mobile Barber hopes to create a safe space for men. A new mobile barber has arrived in St Albans, with its owner hoping to create a safe space for men to talk. During his 22-year career with Royal Mail, Colin Shipton, 48, began balancing posting parcels and cutting hair in Shoreditch, attempting to become a full-time barber. Since his training, Colin decided to leave his post and has taken his barbering on the road through a company called Street Barber. At the start of this year, I purchased a fully furnished hairdresser's van from former company Trimit and began cutting on the move around Hertfordshire, he said. Using Trimit's initiative and lockdown haircuts as inspiration, he began trimming on the move around King's Langley, Apsley, Abbots Langley, Chipperfield, and the surrounding villages. Now covering St Albans 3 days a week, Colin wishes to become a barbering hub for people to speak their mind. He said it would be nice to create a community feel. It's a small and cosy safe space for people to talk, especially men who don't talk enough. Colin also highlighted how beneficial the service can be for the elderly and people with autism. He added, For elderly people who can't get out, it's a godsend as I turn up to their doorstep. To book Street Barber, contact 07907013655.
Daycare rated outstanding by Ofsted. A St Albans daycare service with an inspirational curriculum has been rated outstanding by Ofsted. Muriel Green Daycare has received an upgrade from its previous good rating in November 2018. Ofsted said, Children thrive in this nurturing and rich learning environment while conducting a one-day inspection in October. Daycare manager Sue Wells said, It was a true pleasure to share Muriel Green with Ofsted, showcasing the high standards we uphold every day. Seeing the children beam with pride as they showed off their activities and learning environments was the highlight of it all. Thank you to our incredible staff, our wonderful families, and of course our amazing children. This outstanding rating belongs to all of us. This achievement has been made possible not only through the hard work within our setting, but also through the invaluable shared resources, support and expertise of being part of Roots Federation. The Education Watchdog highlighted leaders and staff plan and implement an inspirational curriculum that is built around the needs of each child. Ofsted said, staff create an environment where all children consistently receive high-quality learning experiences. They provide children with numerous opportunities to extend their knowledge and skills, such as counting, weighing, and mark-making.
Group meets to discuss the future of AI. A new St Albans society is meeting to discuss AI and how it affects the future for themselves and their children. What initially began as a small Facebook forum led by St Albans technology entrepreneur Jamie Claret has blossomed, now boasting over 140 members. Jamie, 47, called it a new community gathering, bringing together local professionals, enthusiasts and curious minds. It is designed to explore the implications, challenges and opportunities of AI and automation in various fields, Jamie said. We are trying to involve people from all walks of life, as AI will have massive implications globally and commercially. Jamie created the group out of concern for his teenage children, believing that AI has the potential to make the web exponentially more dangerous for a generation spending hours a day online. The internet is totally unregulated, he said. you are always one search away from hardcore pornography. It is totally possible to regulate this, but the problem is big tech companies are the ones that lobby for government and don't want regulation. The group's first meeting was held at the Peahen on November the 6th, and Jamie hopes that this will become a monthly affair for those interested in the technology.
Schools' plans for new teaching block. Expansion to accommodate extra pupils. A St Albans school has submitted plans for a new 7-classroom teaching block to accommodate an increase in pupil intake. Marlborough Science Academy is subject to a fresh planning application for the construction of a 2-storey technology block. Submitted by Elbourne Architects Limited on behalf of the school, plans feature 5 general classrooms, 2 IT classrooms, a faculty office, a small meeting room, and an accessible WC. Each classroom, both general and IT, is projected to accommodate 32 students. The ground floor would boast 2 general classrooms and 1 IT classroom, a faculty office for 8 staff, including kitchenette, and a small meeting room for 3 participants, in addition to an accessible WC. Plans would see the first floor comprised of 3 general classrooms, 1 IT classroom, and a store cupboard. In an attempt to boost ecological biodiversity across the school, there will be 12 integrated swift boxes and 2 integrated bat boxes. A statement in support of the application read, "The proposal for a new 7-classroom technology block and associated accommodation at the Marlborough Science Academy does not raise any significant planning concerns. The new building has been thoughtfully designed, not only providing a high-quality teaching environment, but also to be an attractive asset for the school, in keeping with the spirit of the 1950s school buildings, whilst providing the best of the 21st century materials and technology within a tight budget and programme. The school says the extension and upgrades will help to accommodate a total increase of capacity of 140 places requested by Herts County Council, with a further 84 places to be filled over the next 3 years. Plans are currently under consultation and are open to public comments until Saturday, November the 23rd. To view the entire planning application, go to the St Albans City and District Council planning portal and search 5/2024/1677.
Rennie Grove Peace Hospice is helping people honour loved ones this Christmas with their annual Light Up a Life campaign. Rennie Grove Peace Hospice Care is once again offering local people the chance to remember the lives of loved ones with its annual Light Up a Life campaign. The charity will be hosting a Light Up a Life service at St Albans Cathedral on Saturday, November the 23rd at 2:30 in the afternoon. People are invited to come along and light a candle in memory of a loved one and hang a silver star with a personalised message on a special tree of remembrance. The service, led by Canon Will Gibbs, is free to attend and open to anybody who has been bereaved and would like to remember the people they miss in this special way. The service will feature readings, music, poems, and time for reflection. Kate from Hemel Hempstead attended the Light Up a Life service last year after both her parents were cared for by Rennie Grove Peace before they died. She said, "The service was beautiful and very moving, especially as it took place at St Albans Cathedral, a place my parents often visited. It brought Kate comfort to know others were experiencing the same emotions of grief and loss. She felt sharing this moment with people who understood and felt the same was very cathartic. I hope there are other families who will also take comfort from these beautiful services and just being together with others for a moment of reflection and remembrance. Those who can't attend in person are invited to dedicate a star in memory of the people they miss. Anyone who makes a donation to the charity will receive a star and card to personalise and display at home during the festive season. Tracy Hancock, Director of Fundraising at Rennie Grove Peace, said, "We know that this time of year can be very difficult for anybody who has been bereaved. By offering people the chance to dedicate a star or attend our remembrance service, we're giving them a chance to remember the people they have lost, at the same time as supporting our work. Every penny raised through donations at the event and star dedications will be used to provide vital hospice care services for people in our community who are living with life-limiting illnesses."
Newscrest becomes media partner for Business Awards. The publishers of the Hearts Advertiser and its Hertfordshire sister papers, the Welling Hatfield Times, the Comet and the Royston Crow, have announced a new partnership. Newsquest has been announced as the official media partner of the 2024 Biz for Biz Hearts Business Awards, which are recognised as the top business awards in Hertfordshire. The awards event will be held at Chirinbury Farm Hotel on November the 29th. The event will feature TV personality Nikki Chapman as host and will also feature Michael J. Fitch, who has performed for the Queen at Buckingham Palace. Editor Georgia Barrow said, "We are delighted to partner with this prestigious event and to be able to promote all of the amazing business success in Hertfordshire across our own titles. Readers look to our publications in print and online to keep them informed and up to date on all the best in business in this region, and there can be no better way to communicate this than by supporting these awards. We look forward to hearing all the great stories on the night. The event will announce winners in 19 categories, including the Business of the Year Award. Biz for Biz Chairman and Founder Adrian Hawkins, OBE, said, "The awards always show us that the Hertfordshire business world has the ability to rise to the current challenges that we face, and that both customers and staff are also put front and centre of all thinking when it comes to operation and future planning. In previous years, we have witnessed many examples of best practice, and each of the winners this month will no doubt prove worthy of their strength and resolve in business will have been well and truly proven. The Essex and Hearts Air Ambulance has been named as the charity for the 2024 event. Lindsay Wood, Corporate Fundraising Manager for the charity, said, "We were the charity for the awards in 2023. And it was such an honour to tell more than 350 people from more than 70 businesses about our work. They were so generous in their support of our life-saving charity. We are delighted to be back for 2024.
Do one thing for finances. St Albans MP Daisy Cooper is encouraging people to do one thing to boost their finances for Talk Money Week, which is organised by the Money and Pension Service. The big political event that everyone's been talking about recently is, of course, the budget. But at the same time that there's been much chatter about the public's finances, it's clear that many people struggle to dedicate time and attention to thinking about their own. That's why the Money and Pension Service, who I met in Parliament, organises Talk Money Week. Their aim, during this week in particular, is to support everyone in discussing their finances, to help them plan for the future, get advice when needed, and boost their financial well-being. This is so important, whatever your stage of life, as there's always something we can all do better to manage our money. Something they encouraged throughout the week was for everyone to do one thing to boost their financial well-being. They asked anyone who met them in Parliament to share this on a whiteboard, and there were some great ideas about little things we can all do to feel more on top of our finances. Whether it's cancelling a subscription you don't use, finding a cheaper utility provider, checking your pension beneficiaries or writing a will, there are so many things that are easy to put off, but when done, can give you a great sense of control over your day-to-day finances. The Money and Pension Service also recognises how difficult discussing and managing money can be, especially when so many people are struggling with living costs. That's why they also have a range of resources with advice on all things financial, whether that's pensions, savings, benefits, or many other topics. You can read more on their website, moneyhelper.org.uk, or speak to them on the phone, 0800 1 387 777. Whilst the headlines are dominated with talk of the public's finances, Talk Money Week is a really important reminder that taking a bit of time to think about our finances can help us all improve our financial security day to day, prepare for the unexpected, and be on track for a healthier financial future. You can contact Daisy Cooper at her parliamentary office in the House of Commons by calling 020 7219 8568 or at her constituency office in St Albans by calling 01727 519900. You can also contact her via email at daisy.cooper.mp@parliament.uk.
Breast cancer appeal halfway to first target. Campaigners are halfway to reaching their first goal of raising enough money to buy a state-of-the-art equipment that will help revolutionise the treatment of breast cancer in West Harts. The Harts Advertiser and its sister title, the Watford Observer, are both backing the West Harts Hospitals Charities appeal to raise £200,000 to purchase two SavvyScout surgical guidance systems. These will be based at St Albans City Hospital and used by patients from across West Harts, including the Watford area. The guidance systems use radar technology to precisely target and remove cancerous tissue. Appeal organisers have confirmed a total of £50,000 has so far been raised since the campaign was launched just at the end of September by the official charity for West Harts Teaching Hospitals NHS Trust, meaning it's halfway to being able to purchase a first SavvyScout. Almost £30,000 of the total was raised by participants who took part in the Titty Trail, an 11-mile sponsored walk from Watford General Hospital to St Albans City Hospital at the start of this month.
Postbox toppers return for world record attempt. This Christmas, St Albans is set to make history with an exciting festive world record attempt. St Albans Postboxes has planned for 92 woolly postbox toppers across the city and surrounding district, the highest number ever displayed in one town. "We're thrilled to be attempting a world record this year," said co-founder Claire Sutty. "Our toppers not only bring joy to residents and visitors, but also generate much-needed funds for local causes that make a real difference in the community." Since 2018, St Albans Postboxes has been spreading festive cheer while raising over £120,000 for local charities. This year, the team behind the community-driven event is aiming even higher with a record-breaking amount, showcasing both new designs and beloved classics, all handcrafted, to transform the city into a winter wonderland. Proceeds from this year's event will benefit two incredible charities, Up on Downs and Gadsden Place Riding for the Disabled. Businesses, pubs, clubs, churches, residence groups and families can sponsor a topper by reserving their spot online via a simple form. Sponsors can choose a location, donate directly to the charities using the link provided, and have their logo and a personalised message featured on the topper for the month of December. The St Albans Postboxes team is also selling Christmas cards featuring 10 unique designs. All proceeds from the card sales will be donated to the local charities. The festive toppers will be installed across St Albans by the end of November and will remain in place throughout the festive season, delighting locals and visitors alike. The St Albans Postboxes official launch will take place at 9:30 a.m. on Thursday, November the 28th at the Clock Tower Postbox in St Albans, and everyone is welcome to come along.
Multi-instrumentalists to perform at concert in St Albans. Christina Alden and Alex Patterson are set to perform in St Albans for the first time in years. The multi-instrumentalists and songwriters from Norwich will be the headline performers at a concert on Sunday, November the 17th at 7:30 p.m. The event will take place at St Saviour's Church Hall in Sandpit Lane. The duo, who have been touring extensively in the UK and Europe, are known for their intertwining harmony, accomplished musicianship and creative songwriting style. Since their last performance in St Albans as part of the trio Alden, Patterson and Dashwood, the pair have been busy with a 23-date concert hall tour with Show of Hands, a show at Glasgow Royal Concert Hall for Celtic Connections, and performances in Norway, Belgium, France and Ireland. They have also written and self-released 4 albums, composed music for a BBC 4 documentary series, and have had more than 1 million streams on Spotify. Support for the concert will be provided by New Roots 2023 finalist Connor Reynolds. The young Anglo-Irish multi-instrumentalist and singer is already making his mark on the UK folk scene with his blend of original tunes and traditional songs. He is currently working on his debut album, along with some upcoming ensemble projects. Tickets for the concert cost £15, with £10 concessions for under-18s and students. They can be booked online at ticketsource.co.uk/St Albans Folk Music, or by phone on 0333 666 3366, or by paying on the door.
Harpenden scoping opinion for development of over 500 homes. Developers looking to create up to 520 new homes and a primary school on land in Harpenden have submitted a planning application known as scoping opinion. The site is located on land between Bower Heath Lane and Common Lane, with houses to the south and an equestrian centre at the northeast of the site. Plans would see a residential development of up to 520 units, 60-bed extra care facility, new neighbourhood centre for commercial stroke community use, and a 2-form entry primary school, including early years provision. In a report included with the application, developers Crest Nicholson Partnerships and Strategic Land confirm that this report has been prepared to accompany a request for an EIA scoping opinion from St Albans City and District Council, SADC, with respect to the outline planning application for a residential development. The scoping opinion application is a request to SADC to consider an environmental impact assessment of the site, gauging the thoughts of council officers. Although not an official proposal, the plans are a thorough assessment of the site that may be subject to future development. The report by Stantec sets out the findings of an environmental impact assessment scoping study undertaken by the project team and accompanies a request for a scoping opinion submitted to SADC. It identifies a number of ecological designations which are close to the site, including the hamlet of Barrow Heath to the immediate south, an equestrian centre, and Porter's Hill Park. In a decision notice, the council supplied feedback on the application highlighting population and human health, landscape character and visual amenity, biodiversity, transport and access, noise and vibration, air quality, climate change and waste as key points for the environmental assessment. SADC said the developments would support jobs and provide employment, but these would likely be taken up by people outside the district. Due to the scale of the proposal, SADC also recommended that climate change formed a key element of the environmental assessment, as there is potential for significant environmental effects. Waste products was identified for the same reason.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Now for a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, starting with Saturday, November 9th. By now you should know who's the newly elected President of the United States, so it's fitting that any questions, Radio 4 at 10 past 1, comes from the American Museum in Bath, where four leading figures will be canvassed to give their opinions. Any questions, Radio 4, 10 past 1. Another American connection comes in the afternoon drama, which offers a whistle-stop tour of the creative life of Orson Welles and his groundbreaking impact on theatre and radio that preceded his Hollywood debut. Breaking the Rules, O is for Orson, 3 o'clock, Saturday afternoon, Radio 4. The Festival of Remembrance is broadcast on Radio 2 on Saturday night. Highlights from the event, held to honour the servicemen and servicewomen who died serving their country, marks the 80th anniversary of turning points in World War II and recent conflicts such as Kosovo and Afghanistan. This sombre and moving event concludes with a 2-minute silence. The Festival of Remembrance, Radio 2, 8 p.m. Sunday, November 10th. Fans of The Archers should note that the Omnibus edition is broadcast at 9:15 this morning on Radio 4. That's to make way for the Ceremony of Remembrance from the Cenotaph at 10:30, with live coverage introduced by Paddy O'Connell. On a lighter note, Paul Gambaccini Collection on Radio 2 features a nostalgic playlist, including a celebration of the lyricist Tim Rice, who is 80 on Sunday. Paul Gambaccini's Collection, Radio 2, 8 p.m. Sunday. On to programmes then, are the broadcast at the same time, all week, each day. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, every day, same time, same radio station. And make an early start to the week, the Zoe Ball Breakfast Show, which this week features the broadcaster Paddy McGuinness, who is cycling on a chopper bike 300 miles from Wrexham to Glasgow, all in aid of children in need. You can keep up with his progress through the week until Zoe greets him in Glasgow on Friday. The Zoe Ball Breakfast Show, every day, 6:30 a.m, Radio 2. Also, all week, the word money will mean different things to many of us, and this potent word is examined in Book of the Week. In the first episode, a global economist unlocks the mysteries and the awesome power of money. Book of the Week, Money, Radio 4, 11:45, in the morning, all week. The other end of the day, Book of Bedtime, is Precipice. In Robert Harris's novel, Prime Minister Herbert Asquith shares love letters and state secrets with a female aristocrat in the weeks leading up to the First World War. Book of Bedtime, Precipice, Radio 4, 10:45 p.m. On to the rest of the week then, and Tuesday, November 12th, Mosquitoes, annoying little pests, but in this case they form the title of this afternoon's drama. Mosquito on the Wall watches as the hapless politician Peter represents the UK at a climate change conference in Paris. He doesn't want to be there. He wants to retire. Will he get his wish? Find out. The satirical drama, The Mosquito, Radio 4, 2:15, Tuesday afternoon. And staying with politicians, but a real-life one. Who remembers Chris Huhne, the politician who received a six-figure sum for being phone-hacked by Rupert Murdoch's News International? He now wants the police to reopen investigations in the belief that it still goes on at the top of government. Has he got a case? Find out in Phone Hacking, Spying and Politicians, Radio 4, 8 p.m. Tuesday. And it's followed with In Touch, Peter White, with news, views and information for the people who are blind or partially sighted, Radio 4, 8:40, Tuesday evening. Wednesday, November 13th. For the first time, we have the power to decide the fate of our planet and ourselves. These words spoken by the scientist Carl Sagan and the subject of personal tribute by Professor Brian Cox. Radio 4 Extra, entitled Carl Sagan, 10 o'clock on Wednesday, November 13th, or repeated at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. COVID has an effect to a greater or lesser degree on all of us, and this afternoon's play looks at how long COVID changed the life of a dancer who could no longer do her job. The play was inspired by the writer's own experience. If It Kills Me is on Radio 4 on Wednesday at 2:15. Professor Brian Cox is back again on Thursday, November 14th, this time with Robin Ince, as they head to Bletchley Park, where they discuss cybercrime and warfare, something that sadly in this day and age we should all be aware of. The Infinite Monkey Cage, Radio 4, 11 o'clock, Thursday, November 14th. We are constantly being advised to take a daily walk for the sake of our health, so the group about to embark on their 100th walk should be pretty healthy. No doubt Claire Balding will find out when she joins the Old Lags for their walk around the Avon Gorge. Ramblings, the Old Lags, is on at 3 o'clock on Thursday afternoon on Radio 4. And finally, Friday, November 15th. In a celebrated edition from 2020, the former footballer Ian Wright chooses the 8 tracks for his Desert Island Discs. 9 o'clock, Radio 4, Friday morning. One of the most consistently funny programmes on the radio is the comedy slot Dead Ringers. Impressionist John Coleshaw and Jan Ravens take an amusing look at this week's topical subjects. Radio 4 for this, 6:30 p.m. And continuing the subject of voices, the following programme asks what factors determine the way we sound. Is it smooth like honey or rough like gravel? And what can our voices tell us about ourselves? Fascinating topic, the subject of crowd science. BBC World Service, Friday evening, 8:30. That's it. Thank you to Terry for the highlights this week. May I wish you a peaceful, safe and enjoyable one of radio listening.
Hello again. This is John C. with the Audio Describe television programmes for the week starting Saturday, 9th of November, and ending Friday, the 15th of November, 2024, compiled by John B. So let's start with Saturday. Mary helps Claudia Winkleman in Mary's Foolproof Dinners on BBC Two at 10:45 a.m. Bargain Hunt is in Norfolk at 1:15 p.m. on BBC One. If you missed the first part of Sir David Attenborough's new wildlife documentary, you can see part one of Asia at 3:30 this afternoon on BBC One. Rob Rinder and Philippa Langley investigate new leads in the case of the infamous historical mystery of the Princess in the Tower, the new evidence. They present it on Channel 4 at 6:15 p.m. The couples present their routines in the hope of proceeding to next week's Blackpool special in Strictly Come Dancing at 6:35 tonight on BBC One. The results will be announced tomorrow at 7:20. Kadeen Cox, Adam James and Ellie Taylor say what they see and try to win £50,000 for their charity in Celebrity Catchphrase on ITV One at 7:15. Titanic seems to be an everlasting story. Tonight, Channel 4 presents photographs and film footage of the doomed ship's construction and the final photo as it sets sail into the North Atlantic. Titanic in Colour is on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. Adrian Lester hosts the Royal British Legion's Festival of Remembrance from the Royal Albert Hall tonight at 9 p.m. It's not audio described, but you should be able to understand what's going on from the commentary. And on to Sunday, the 10th. Key players in our political world are interviewed on Sunday with Laura Koonsberg on BBC One at 9 a.m. There's live but not audio described coverage from the Cenotaph in London as the King leads commemorations on Remembrance Sunday. BBC One, that's 10:15. The afternoon film on BBC One is the story of a horse who travels across the battlefields of World War One while its owner searches for it. War Horse is on BBC One at 2:35. There are 4 episodes of The Simpsons on Channel 4 between 12:30 and 2:30 p.m. David Attenborough looks at the wildlife of Asia's mountains, from elephants in high-altitude tea plantations to the shy red panda in Nepal. Asia is on BBC One at 6:20. The couple leaving the dance floor will be revealed in Strictly Come Dancing, The Results, which is on BBC One at 7:20. The village of Elverton Cum Latterly gathers for its annual dominoes tournament, but there's opposition from a drag queen event, and then one of the dominoes players is found dead. Can Barnaby find the culprit? You can find out in Midsummer Murders on ITV1 at 8 p.m. Bob and Paul are in search of grayling in the River Frome in Dorset, where the British record for this fish was set. The final part of Mortimer and Whitehouse Gone Fishing is on BBC Two at 9. Do you remember Wolf Hall? It's more than 10 years since it was on. And now there's a new series. Cromwell picks his way through the wreckage of Anne Boleyn's death to take his place as principal counsellor to King Henry VIII. Part 1 of Wolf Hall, The Mirror and the Light is on BBC One at 9. Now programmes that are on at the same time and the same channel each weekday. All the following programmes are on BBC One. Homes Under the Hammer at 11:50. Bargain Hunt at 12:20. Doctors at 2 p.m, but not on Friday. Escape to the Country at 3 p.m. And now for the other channels. Gary Barlow's Wine Tour, South Africa, is on ITV1 at 2 p.m. Dynasties 2, a wildlife programme, on BBC Two at 3:15. Wonders of Life on BBC Two at 4:15. Heartbeat, 7 p.m. on ITV3. Strictly Takes Two on BBC Two at 6:30. This is not audio described, but if you've been following Strictly, it will make sense. And looking now at Monday, the 11th of November, there are two quiz programs that might interest you, which are not audio described, but you should understand what's going on. Both programmes are on BBC Two, Mastermind at 7:30, and then University Challenge at 8:30. First-time buyer Johans has purchased an office unit on a London commercial estate, which he plans to turn into a stylish two-bedroom house. Find out how he gets on in George Clark's Remarkable Renovations on Channel 4 at 8. EastEnders is on BBC One at 7:30. And at the same time on ITV, Emmerdale, followed at 8, still on ITV One, is Coronation Street. How about an evening meal of five-spice duck breast with a duck heart skewer and an orange sauce? That is one of the challenges for the four chefs in MasterChef The Professionals, which is on BBC One at 9. Across the UK, around 3 women take their own lives each week as a result of domestic abuse. Queen Camilla presents this documentary and meets families who have lost loved ones, survivors, and people hoping to end the issue of domestic violence. Her Majesty the Queen, Behind Closed Doors, is on ITV One at 9. When her mum gets into a legal pickle, Alma attempts to channel Erin Brockovich in Alma's Not Normal on BBC Two at 10 p.m. Now Tuesday, the 12th of November, Mary demonstrates how to make a chocolate cake in Mary's Foolproof Dinners on BBC Two at 7:30. Both EastEnders on BBC One and Emmerdale on ITV One are on at 7:30 tonight. It's a step back in time in the tent this week, as it's the 1970s, and the contestants create towering profiterole masterpieces. The Great British Bake Off is on Channel 4 at 8. Six famous faces join Alan Carr for a fun-filled makeover to raise money for children in need, as they transform a young carers project in the Midlands. Interior Design Masters for Children in Need is on BBC One at 8. Sue Perkins continues her journey from Paris to Istanbul. Today she's travelling from Strasbourg to Munich. Sue Perkins' Big Adventure is on Channel 4 at 9:15. creating Italian blue cheese nudie dumplings served with broccoli soup is one of the challenges faced by the chefs in MasterChef, The Professionals, tonight at 9. How about ending your evening with a romantic comedy film? Zoe, a filmmaker, starts shooting a film about her friend Kaz, a British-Pakistani man who has tentatively agreed to an assisted marriage. As preparations develop, the groom starts to have doubts. What's Love Got to Do with It is the late film on BBC One at 10:40. And so on to Wednesday, the 13th. As on Monday, EastEnders, BBC One and Emmerdale ITV One are on at 7:30. Then Coronation Street is on ITV One at 8. A metal bookend bearing the SAS motto and a writing case used by a woman who worked at Bletchley Park are in need of help from the repair shop tonight at 8 on BBC One. And there's lots of choice at 9. In 2019, Olaf and Frida set out to build on a slice of land boxed in by a railway line and a busy road. Kevin MacLeod returns to see how they fared. Grand Designs is on Channel 4 at 9. The pilot and passengers of a hot air balloon enjoy views over Turkey's Gorim National Park, where people have lived for thousands of years in the caves that litter the park's cliffs. National Parks from Above is on More 4 at 9. Also at 9, the mystery of the beluga whale that approached a Norwegian fishing boat seeking help. The animal was found to be wearing a harness fitted with a camera mount, and on the buckle the words, Equipment St. Petersburg. Could the creature be spying for Putin? Secrets of the Spy Whale, on BBC Two at 9. And finally at 9, the hunt is on for Ian, as a picture of Anton Bergen begins to emerge. Are Calder and Tosh dealing with the actions of a jealous ex-husband? Shetland continues on BBC One at 9. Thursday, the 14th. Today sees the final ever episode of Doctors. Graham becomes a partner, while Scarlett is in no mood to celebrate her birthday. Doctors is on BBC One at 2 p.m. This is followed by a look at key moments from 24 years of the drama. Doctors, a celebration on BBC One at 2:35. ITV One is showing Nations League football at 7 p.m. The match is between Greece and England. It's not audio described, but if you are interested, you should get a good flavour from the commentary. Having watched Bake Off on Tuesday, would you like another portion? Joe Brand is joined by Judge Paul Hollywood, Ellie Taylor, and Leighton Williams. The Great British Bake Off, An Extra Slice, is on Channel 4 at 8. The third quarter final and the chefs have to invent a dish in 80 minutes, featuring offal. MasterChef, The Professionals, is on BBC One at 8. Following maintenance and some relaxation for the crew in Guam, HMS Queen Elizabeth leaves a vast convoy of warships near the disputed waters in the South China Sea. Beijing is not amused. The warship, Tour of Duty, is on BBC Two at 8. It's the final, and the contestants have to impress Greg Davis for one last time. But to do so, they must eat raw onion, spot some tiny chairs, and send a giant egg into the sky. Taskmaster, the final, is on Channel 4 at 9. And finally, to Friday, the 15th of November. Marlene suspects her mother is involved in a terrible crime in Hope Street on BBC One at 2 p.m. Emmerdale and Coronation Street are on ITV One at 7:30 and 8 respectively tonight. Children in Need from Media City in Salford takes over BBC One from 7 p.m. As cocaine production increases in South America, gangs are increasingly using submarines to bring vast quantities across the Atlantic to Spain. Tonight's unreported world film follows customs officials as they track these sometimes homemade vessels. Inside Spain's Narco Submarines is on Channel 4 at 7:30. A landlady is murdered in tonight's episode, subtitled The Theatre of the Invisible, in Father Brown, which is on the UN Drama Channel at 8. As Taskmaster concludes, Junior Taskmaster is just beginning. Tonight, the junior contenders have to cram biscuits through a sieve and launch aeroplanes from a great height. You can find out how they get on by tuning in to Channel 4 at 8 p.m. A murder mystery night at a local hotel with a spooky history takes a lethal turn when a body turns up. This Christmas special of the Madame Blanc Mysteries is on Channel 5 at 9. And if you've been watching Everyone Else Burns, tonight sees the final episode. Joshua and Heather's wedding day arrives, and Fiona must decide what she's willing to sacrifice for her husband. See how they get on at 10 p.m. on Channel 4. And that's all for this week. We hope you find something of interest, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye for now.
Hello, everyone. This is 10 Today, a 10-minute set of exercises to do at home to help keep yourself active. Before we get to today's presenter, a couple of housekeeping points to note. The 10 Today project is funded by the Big Lottery and Sport England, and when you're doing the exercises, it's important that you don't push yourself too far, and by taking part, you agree to 10 Today's terms and conditions. You can read these terms and conditions at tnflink.uk/10T, and the 10T is the digit 1, the digit 0, and the letter T. And please remember that you agree to take part at your own risk. Today's exercises are brought to you by Mike, and here he is.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to 10 Today, broadcast number 5. This is a short 10-minute physical activity routine which will get you moving and stretching. It's great for your health, including improving your balance and building up your strength. Just take it at your own pace. There are plenty of options. If an exercise feels too much, just take it easy and have a break. All the exercises can be done either stood up or sitting down, so just do whatever feels good for you today. We want you to do this exercise safely. You are responsible for monitoring how you're feeling throughout the session. So if you feel any discomfort or pain, for example, if you feel unwell or dizzy or experience palpitations, then please stop and seek medical advice. Please remember, you agree to take part at your own risk. If remaining seated, at least to begin with, it would be ideal if you can use a hard chair that you can sit upright in, which could be a dining chair, preferably without arms, which could get in the way in some exercises, and sit with your feet flat on the floor. Okay, if you're stood up, just step your feet hip-width apart, relax your shoulders, and stand up nice and tall. Take a couple of deep breaths. If you're sitting down, place both feet firmly on the floor. Keep your back straight, relax your shoulders, and take a couple of deep breaths. In and out. In and out. So, the first exercise is called supporting the sky. Raise both arms together straight up to the ceiling with your palms up, and then turn your palms to face down and push down. And again, so hands up and hands down, and repeat, remembering to push up with those palms supporting the sky, and down. And now, keep going. This is a really good exercise just to get those wrists moving, and it stretches the muscles in your arms and shoulders, which can often get a little tight. It's also just a nice gentle warm-up. So we should have just a couple more now. So hands up with your palms up, and then palms down and hands down. And one more time, hands up and hands down. The next exercise is called Dancing the Rainbow. So you want to move your feet a little bit wider than hip width apart into a wide stance. You raise your right arm straight up with your palm up and pushed down. Now do the same with the left arm. Up and down. And keep going, remembering to turn the palm down on the way down. Keep going, alternating your arms. This is a really good exercise for strengthening those shoulders and arms. So keep going, remembering to change those arms and facing the palm up to the ceiling when you press up, and then palm facing down when you press down. So the next one is called Kick the Ball. If you're standing, I recommend you're near something that you can hold on to for balance. So if you swing your right leg forward, keeping it as straight as possible, and then swing it back to standing. So swinging your right leg and keep repeating that action. If you're chair-based, straighten out your right leg right in front of you, feeling the nice stretch down your leg. Then return your foot to the floor and repeat. So whether you're sitting or standing, you're just swinging your right leg forward and back, imagining there's a ball in front of you that you want to kick. Do this a couple more times. This is great for mobilising your hips, stretching your leg and improving your balance. Now we're going to do exactly the same for the left leg. So swing your leg forward and back, forward and back, keeping that leg nice and straight. You might be starting to feel your heart rate go up a little now, but that's great. It just means you're building up your strength. And now a couple more times. We should all be feeling nice and warm now. Next up, it's the twister. Place your hands on your hips, relaxing those shoulders, and twist your upper body to the right, and then twist back to the center, and then to the other side. So just keep twisting your upper body from left to right, feeling that nice stretch in your side. And just keep going for a few more times. Good work. Definitely, you should be feeling warm now. Next up is moving legs. Again, if you're standing, you might want to be near something you can hold on to for balance. So raise your right leg out and straight. Then move it to the side so you feel that nice stretch in the top of your leg. Then move it back to the center and back down. Repeat this with the left leg. So lift your leg up straight out in front. Then move to the side, then back straight, and back down. So that's up, to the side, back straight, and back down. And again, do that a couple more times. This is really good for your hips, tummy, and thighs. Slow and controlled is more challenging and rewarding, so keep going. And remember to keep the leg straight. Lift your leg up straight out in front. Then move to the side. Then back straight. And back down. So up, to the side, back straight, and back down. And just a couple more times. Now we have Circle the Sky. Raise both arms together, straight up, and circle them in a small circle twice, using your shoulders to move too. And then push your arms down. And again, raise your arms together, straight up, circle them round twice, and push down. So raise your arms up, circle one, two, and push down. Again, this is a really good one for getting your shoulders moving and building up strength. Keep going, really moving those shoulders and arms. We should all be getting warm now. If you want to make it a little harder, move your shoulders in even bigger circles. So just a couple more here, lifting the arms up, circling twice, and pushing down. And just one more. Good. Next is going low. These exercises are slightly different if you're sitting or standing. So if you're standing, place your feet hip-width apart, bend at your knees, and try to keep your back straight. And then straighten up your legs again. Keep your feet facing forward, and try not to let your knees move in front of your toes. So you're just moving up and down by bending your legs. A little bit like a mini squat. If you're sitting, just straighten out your right leg right in front of you, feeling that nice stretch down your leg, then return your foot to the floor and repeat on the other side. Whichever variation you're doing, you're working your legs. If you're standing, you're also working your bottom. Okay, so keep going, always remembering to keep your back straight, and for those of you who are standing, bending knees down and then up and sitting, raising alternate legs. If you're standing, can you make it more challenging by going down slowly and holding at the bottom briefly? Right, just a few more. Next, butterfly wings. So this is a nice exercise where you're rolling your shoulders back. Bend your arms so both hands are at chest height, and then use your arms to move your shoulders back in nice large circles, using both arms at the same time. If this is a bit challenging, you can do one arm at a time. So keep moving, circling both arms from the back. This is great for the shoulders and upper back, so keep moving. They can be quite energetic, these. Make the circle as wide as you can and keep going. Just a couple more now. Now we have charging the fists. Whether you're standing or sitting, place your feet hip distance apart in a strong stance. Clench your fists, holding them at chest height, and then punch out with your right hand and pull back. And repeat the punch with your left. Keep going, punching with alternate hands. It's a great stress buster, this one. Really think about how your muscles are responding here, making the punches slow and controlled. Just a couple more now. Good job. Now, we really should all be feeling warm. If you're feeling a little out of breath, well, that's a good thing. It means you've been working. If you're not a little out of breath, I think you could probably work a little bit harder next time. Anyway, we're nearly finished for today. We'll just finish off with a nice stretch and cool down. So we're going to start with a hamstring stretch. So step forward with your right foot, placing your foot out in front of you with your foot flat on the floor. Then bend your left leg and put your hands on your hips and just lean forward slightly. And whether you're sitting or standing, you should feel a nice stretch down the back of the leg. Hold it for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Then return to a standing position and swap your legs. So this time step forward with your left foot, placing your foot out in front of you with your foot flat out on the floor. Then bend your right leg and just lean forward slightly. Again, feeling that nice long stretch. Hold for another 10 seconds. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And the final stretch, hugging a tree. Just hold your arms out in front of you, just like you're hugging a tree, directly in front of you. And your arms, they form a nice circle in front of you. Then cup your hands, putting one hand in front of the other, and push your hands together, feeling that nice stretch across your shoulders and arms. Again, another 10 seconds. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now, sit up or stand up and return to that nice, relaxed posture we had at the beginning. Brilliant. So, that was all the exercises for today. I hope you enjoyed them. Just to finish off, shake it out. So, just shake those arms and hands, and then your legs and feet. Great work, everyone. Doing 10 today just 3 times a week can have great health benefits. It's fun and you'll simply feel better. So do keep going. Thanks for listening.
Hello, I'm David, and here is a selection of historical events that took place this week in the past. On November the 17th in 1970, the first Page 3 girl appeared in the Sun. It was one of the first times a nude photograph was published in a newspaper solely for entertainment purposes. The model was Stephanie Kahn, although a sub-editor misread her name and she was billed as Stephanie Rahn. The Page 3 feature became extremely popular and is credited with helping The Sun to overtake its rival, The Mirror, in terms of circulation. It also propelled several of the models, including Linda Lusardi, Samantha Fox, and Stephanie Kahn herself, onto successful careers in acting and music. The last Page 3 girl appeared in 2015. On November the 18th in 1307, the Swiss folk hero William Tell allegedly split an apple perched on the head of his young son with a bolt from his crossbow. Tell was an expert mountain climber and marksman with a crossbow, who encouraged the Swiss population to open rebellion against their Austrian overlords, marking the foundation of the Swiss Confederacy. According to legend, Tell's defiance began when Albrecht Gessler, the new and tyrannical representative of the Duke of Austria in the town of Altdorf, hung his hat on top of a pole and demanded that all the townsfolk bow before it. Tell refused to do so and was arrested, along with his young son Walter. Intrigued by Tell's famed marksmanship, but resentful of his defiance, Gessler devised a cruel punishment. Tell and his son were both to be executed. However, he could redeem his life by shooting an apple off the head of Walter in a single attempt, which he did. In some versions of the legend, Gessler then reneged on his agreement, but was killed by Tell. Whether all the details of the legend are true or not, Tell has become an important figure in the history and folklore of Switzerland. On November 19th in 2017, the first interstellar object to reach the solar system was detected. It has been named Oumuamua, a Hawaiian name which translates as First Distant Messenger. When it was first observed, it was about 21 million miles from Earth. That is about 85 times as far away as the Moon, and already heading away from the Sun. A small reddish object, Oumuamua, is estimated to be between 300 and 3,000 feet long, with its width and thickness both estimated between 115 and 548 feet. It is unusually elongated compared to all but a few other natural bodies observed in the solar system, and this feature raised speculation about its origin. It has a tumbling rather than a spinning motion, and it is moving sufficiently fast relative to the Sun that it is probably an extrasolar object. Proposed explanations of its origin include being a remnant of a disintegrated rogue comet or a small slice of an alien planet. But its planetary system of origin and age are unknown. Its path cannot be captured into a solar orbit, so Oumuamua will eventually leave the solar system and continue into interstellar space. On November the 20th in 1820, the Nantucket whaling ship Essex sank after a sperm whale rammed her 2,000 miles from the western coast of South America. The ship's first mate, Owen Chase, one of eight survivors, recorded the event. Although not the first such incident in history, the loss of the Essex was one of two actual events that served as the genesis for American writer Herman Melville's classic novel Moby Dick. The other was the alleged killing in the late 1830s of the albino sperm whale named Mocha Dick, which was rumoured to have 20 or so harpoons in his back from other whalers, and appeared to attack ships with premeditated ferocity during more than 100 encounters with whalers in the decades between 1810 and the 1830s. Together, these two events would become the inspiration for Melville's tale of the maniacal quest of Ahab, captain of the whaler Pequod, for vengeance against the giant white sperm whale that bit off his leg on the ship's previous voyage. On November 21st in 1953, Time magazine published evidence proving that Piltdown Man, until then regarded as an important missing link in the evolutionary line between early apes and man, was a scientific fraud. In 1912, amateur archaeologist Charles Dawson claimed that he had discovered the remains of a previously unknown early human in gravel beds at Piltdown, East Sussex. Although there were doubts about their authenticity virtually from the beginning, the remains were broadly accepted for many years, but eventually the fossil was shown to be a composite, consisting of a human skull of medieval age, the 500-year-old lower jaw of an orangutan, and chimpanzee fossil teeth. Someone had created the appearance of age by staining the bones and modifying the teeth to a shape more suited to a human diet. The Piltdown hoax is prominent for two reasons: the attention it generated around the subject of human evolution, and the length of time, 41 years, it took to expose it as a forgery. Various individuals were suspected of being the forger, including the author Arthur Conan Doyle, but an extensive scientific review in 2016 established that its discoverer, Charles Dawson, was the guilty party. On November the 22nd in 2017, a baby girl provided a remarkable first in the UK. Vanellope Hope Wilkins was born with her heart outside her body. She is believed to be the first in the UK to survive with this extremely rare condition. Part of Vanellope's stomach also protruded from her chest, and she had no breastbone. After undergoing three operations to place her heart back in her chest, the first within an hour of her birth, and spending her first 14 months in hospital, the little girl was finally allowed home. Finally, on November the 23rd in 1869, the Cutty Sark was launched on the River Leven at Dumbarton in Scotland. She was one of the last T-clippers to be built, and one of the fastest. She was named after the short skirt of the fictional witch in Robert Burns' poem Tam O'Shanter. In the 19th century, speed was an advantage to vessels carrying a high-value seasonal product, such as tea from China. Faster ships could usually obtain a higher price for transporting cargoes than slower vessels. And tea merchants would use the names of fast-sailing ships that carried their products in their advertising. Cutty Sark sailed in 8 tea seasons, before more efficient steamships and the opening of the Suez Canal made tea clippers uneconomic. She then spent 10 years in the wool trade from Australia, initially proving faster than more modern steamships. Sold to a Portuguese company and renamed Ferreira, she carried cargoes between Portugal, Brazil, Africa and Britain before becoming a cadet training ship in the UK. Eventually, Cutty Sark became a museum and a popular tourist attraction located near the centre of Greenwich, close to the National Maritime Museum. And here endeth the news for this week in the past.
Hello, this is Sue, and here are some famous people who had their birthdays this week. On the 17th of November in 1937, the English comedian Peter Cook was born. He was a leading figure of the British satire boom of the 1960s and associated with anti-establishment comedy. After being involved in the Footlights Club at Cambridge University, he created the comedy stage review Beyond the Fringe, beginning a long-running partnership with Dudley Moore. They appeared together on the television in the award-winning Not Only But Also, with comedy sketches in which they are often seen trying very hard not to laugh at each other. Cook and Moore went on to appear together in films and jointly hosted Saturday Night Live in the US in the 1970s and also produced several LPs of their more risque comedy as Derek and Clive. Cook is referred to as the father of modern satire and is one of the best-loved comics in the English-speaking world. It's hard to keep a straight face when confronted with his offbeat humour and characters such as Sir Arthur Strebe Gleebling. On the 18th of November 1909, the American lyricist, songwriter and singer Johnny Mercer was born. He composed and sang from the 1930s through to the 50s, and some of his songs were among the most successful hits of the time, including Moon River, Days of Wine and Roses, Autumn Leaves, and Hooray for Hollywood. He wrote the lyrics to more than 1,500 songs, including for Broadway shows and movies, and received 19 Oscar nominations and won 4 Best Original Song Oscars. He collaborated with other greats, such as Jerome Kern and Hoagity Carmichael, and co-founded Capitol Records. He had a hand in so many iconic songs that rather than tell you more about his life, it seems better to just remind you of some of these. Jeepers Creepers and The Angel Sings, That Old Black Magic, One for My Baby and One for the Road, Come Rain or Come Shine, and finally, who can forget him singing Zippity-Doo-Dah. What a great legacy. On the 19th of November in 1961, the American actress Meg Ryan was born. She's best known for her leading roles in romantic comedies in the 1990s, and two of her films, When Harry Met Sally and Sleepless in Seattle, are ranked among the 10 greatest romantic comedies of all time. She portrayed her characters with an easy charm, and has been called the Queen of Rom-Coms. She's also starred in thrillers, dramas and action films, with varying degrees of success, and has turned her hand to directing. Ryan has not always been comfortable with her fame, and had a particularly awkward appearance on The Michael Parkinson Show, which led to criticism from the British public. However, you can overlook that very easily, as you enter into the spirit of the wonderful romance of her films, and you know there's going to be a happy ending every time. On the 20th of November, 1889, the astronomer Edwin Hubble was born in the US. He played a crucial role in establishing the fields of extragalactic astronomy and observational cosmology. His most important discoveries are that the universe goes beyond our own Milky Way galaxy, and what were thought to be clouds of gas or nebulae within our galaxy were in fact entire galaxies beyond. He also did groundbreaking work on how distances between nebulae could be measured by looking at changes in wavelengths of light. This became known as Hubble's Law. Hubble's ideas were initially scoffed at by other experts as they fundamentally changed the scientific view of the universe. However, they eventually became accepted and paved the way for future astronomers. Hubble also campaigned to have astronomy recognized as part of the discipline of physics, so astronomers could be considered for a Nobel Prize. Although he could not be awarded a Nobel Prize posthumously, the Hubble Space Telescope was named in his honor. This has been orbiting our Earth since 1990 and continues to expand our understanding of the great beyond. On the 21st of November in 1942, the cartoon character Tweety Pie first debuted in A Tale of Two Kitties. The lovable yellow canary became a much-loved star in the Warner Brothers' Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies series. Despite the long eyelashes and high voice, Tweety is in fact a male, and, when paired with Sylvester the cat, the duo became one of the most notable double acts in cartoon history. The cartoons followed a standard plot, with Sylvester trying ever more elaborate schemes to eat Tweety Pie, which always failed, often due to the timely intervention of Hector the bulldog. Tweety appeared to be the innocent party with his cute baby voice, but often showed a darker side by directing Sylvester towards an oncoming train or off the side of a tall building. Those cartoons endured long after they were made in the 1940s and 50s, and many of us can still link the catchphrases with the Looney Tunes characters. Tweety Pie, Tweety tore a putty tat, and he did, he tore a putty tat. Happy memories of those often rather violent cartoons. On the 22nd of November, 1819, the English novelist George Eliot was born. Her real name was Mary Ann Evans, and she wrote many essays and newspaper articles under this name. She had received a surprising amount of education for a woman of her time, as her father had deemed her unlikely to marry due to her unattractive features. However, she decided to write her novels under a male pseudonym so her work would be taken seriously, and she also wished to avoid scandal, as she was living with a married man at the time. She wrote seven novels, including Adam Bede, The Mill on the Floss, Silas Marner, Middlemarch, and Daniel Deronda. Her works are known for their realism, psychological insight, and detailed description of the countryside, and many have been made into television dramas, which has reintroduced her work to the wider public in more recent times. Middlemarch is regarded as her most accomplished novel, and has been voted at various times as the 10th greatest literary work ever written, and the first among all British novels by a landslide. It is now available as an audiobook if you wish to listen and form your own opinion, but you'll need a spare 35 hours. And lastly today, on the 23rd of November in 1881, William H. Bonney, better known as Billy the Kid, was born. The American outlaw and gunfighter is alleged to have killed 21 men before he himself was shot and killed at the tender age of 21. His life story is a grim one. From being orphaned and abandoned age 15, he was soon arrested for robbery and jailed. He managed to escape 2 days later and became a fugitive travelling around the western US, where he turned his hand to gambling and a spot of horse theft. He fought and shot a man, was detained again, and again escaped, after which he had a go at cattle rustling. In true Wild West style, he became involved in a local militia and ended up behind bars again, only to escape a third time, get involved in more mayhem and murdering, and be arrested, tried, and sentenced to hang. Undeterred, Bonnie effected yet another escape, murdering two men in the process, and using an axe to cut himself out of leg irons. He was finally apprehended and shot in New Mexico, where grateful residents had a whip round for a substantial reward. There have, of course, been claims that a character with such a history might have escaped again, and as late as 2015, there were still calls to see a death certificate as proof of his reported death. Bonnie was clearly a desperate but resourceful fellow, and law enforcement was clearly pretty lax back in his day.
Hello, it's Clive Davis from the Wildlife Sound Recording Society. Today's recording relates to a now rare bird in the UK, the corncrake. Sadly, farming practices have now driven this bird to the far northern extremities of the UK. Personally, I have not seen one, but heard one calling once from a nettle bed on a small Scottish island near to the Isle of Mull. Frustratingly, it never showed itself, but sat calling constantly while I was nearby. Enjoy Joe Kennedy's recording of the corncrake.
Hi, Mum, it's Joe.
Hang on.
Can you tell me about the bird at the bottom of your garden when you were little?
We had a small allotment, and beyond that was a bit of land which was... we didn't go on to. It was rough and wild, and it fell down a bank to a stream. Although the address was Belfast, it was right on the edge of Belfast. Now, we never went on to that land, but I remember hearing a very raucous noise, which my mother told me was a corncrake. How she knew, I don't know. Maybe, having come from the Somerset Levels, she'd heard corncrakes there when she was a child. I never saw the corncrake, but I remember hearing it. We left that house in 1951, so I would have been under 12. It was just after the war.
100 years ago, there were corncrakes in every county. They were absolutely everywhere, and they would have been a regular, maybe not sight, but a sound. People living in the country, they would know corncrake, or land rails, as they were known.
That's John Bowler from the RSPB. And although we don't have official records, it's believed tens of thousands of corncrakes used to migrate north from Africa every springtime to spend the summer in the British countryside. They'd have one or two broods of young, then fly back to Africa in September for the winter months. By the 1990s, they'd almost all vanished. But there are a few places in the UK where they managed to hang on. We're going to take a journey to one of these last remaining strongholds.
British agents.
Treon.
Treon. Gaelic for corncrake.
My sister recalls in the 50s, the later 50s, hearing corncrakes, and they must have disappeared after that, because although I didn't stay at home, no one ever talked about hearing corncrakes.
As things became more intensive, particularly after the Second World War, people started cutting fields earlier with bigger tractors, faster. Corncrakes just couldn't keep up with that. That rapid industrialisation, really, of the landscape is what did in for them, but, you know, throughout the UK.
Clitter cutter. Natty noisemaker. Long-legged bird of the little cornfield.
Could I ask any more foot passengers? Ask any more foot passengers for Tyree? Please make your way to the main square for disembarking now. Thank you.
It's June and we've arrived on the Isle of Tyree in the Inner Hebrides. On the journey here, you heard Jamie MacDonald from the island sharing some old Gaelic names for the corncrake. This is where John Bowler lives too. It's a busy time of year for him. He's out in the middle of the night listening for corncrakes. Every year, it's his job to estimate the size of the breeding corncrake population on the island. This is important ecological data and can be used to track trends over time. Because the birds are so elusive, the best way to find out how many there are is to count the number of calling males during June, which is the peak calling season.
The first broods are hatching out and you'll start seeing chicks if you're lucky. And then the males, this is when they're really going for it. They're really calling. They call from midnight till three just consistently. He's calling to other males to proclaim where he is and to keep them out of his bit. But also he's calling to females. And it's basically saying, yeah, if there's more females out there, I'm interested.
So, how come on Tyree, corncrakes have managed to survive and even thrive?
There was a very good researcher who still works for us called Dr. Rhys Green, or now Professor Rhys Green, I should say. And he worked very closely on the corncrakes to work out exactly what they needed when they come to these islands. So when they first come in mid to late April, having what we call early cover, somewhere they can get into and be safe, find food, but also not be predated is critical. So providing patches of early cover, nettles, iris on Tyree, even reed beds, they need something. And then adjacent to that, they need either a hayfield or a silage field, which will grow up in the summer, which they can then move into. Quite often they'll have the first brood in the early cover, and then the second nest will be in the kind of grass crop. So you need that as well. But that grass crop can't be cut ideally until the 1st of August, and even better later than that. And if it's cut in a friendly way, that's really important. So from the inside of the field out, pushing the young out to the edges rather than cutting from the outside in, which was the traditional way, and you end up with all the corncrake chicks stuck in that last bit of grass, and they all get cut up. A lot of conservation work went in with the crofters and farmers here. RSPB and others like SNH did a lot of work getting folk into schemes so that they farm in a more corncrake-friendly way. Numbers went up quite rapidly to about 400 calling males in about 2010. And then since then, we've held on to really big numbers. There's been a slight decline in recent years, but we still have a very strong population.
The removal of scrappy, unproductive vegetation vital for early cover, the faster growing of grass enabling earlier cutting, and the introduction of efficient cutting machines and methods devastated corncrake populations across most of Britain. But now, through the hard work of conservationists, ecologists and farmers, we know what we need to do to get the corncrake back. Would you like to walk out into the countryside near you and know somewhere in the undergrowth a mysterious brown bird has arrived for the summer and come midnight will be calling from the fields again? If we want, and why wouldn't we can bring a long lost sound from the summer pastures back.
Hello, this is Lucy, and this is a very interesting article from Hertfordshire Life magazine about the Knights Templar and their connections with Hertfordshire. 9 centuries after the Knights Templar was founded, they still fire the imagination. In Harts, a key temple, land, and the creation of a new town are all part of the story and legend. It's 900 years since the order was founded in Jerusalem, but the Knights Templar has lost none of its power to captivate and intrigue us. Speculation and conspiracy about its activities at home and abroad continues to inspire books, films, and last year a major television drama, Nightfall, with fans eagerly awaiting season 2. But did you know there are strong connections between Hertfordshire and this most famous yet mysterious of religious orders? Formed in around 1119, historians can't quite agree the date, after the first crusade to protect Christian pilgrims travelling to the Holy Land, the Templars, or the Poor Fellow Soldiers of Christ and of the Temple of Solomon, as they are properly called, are best known as an elite fighting force. But their remit over time went much wider than crusading. While knights battled to keep Jerusalem in Christian hands, the growing band of the Templars' non-fighting representatives wielded power of another kind, acting as bankers and advisers to royalty and the ruling classes of Europe, controlling a sizable empire which stretched across the continent. It was with a view to recruiting new crusaders that the Order's Grand Master ventured to England in 1128. The country was to become an important territory for the Templars. The Middle Eastern Crusades drained money and manpower with astonishing speed, and England provided willing recruits for the cause and generated much-needed funds to finance it. Income came primarily from land holdings. Sizable plots were gifted to the Templars by noblemen and wealthy landowners who believed that assisting the order was their Christian duty, and such a donation would ensure their sins were absolved in the afterlife. Extensive landholdings, including many sites in Hertfordshire, allowed the Templars to accrue rents and produce commodities for trade, and also assisted with its banking operations. The order acted as guardians of money and valuables for pilgrims and crusaders travelling to the Middle East, giving them a letter of credit which could be exchanged for funds in other Templar territories. Its European network of secure estates also made them ideally placed to assist with the transfer of funds between countries. Hertfordshire had a stake in these activities, not least because of its proximity to the capital and its good infrastructure network. So important was the county, in fact, the Templars chose to place a preceptory here, second only to that of its English headquarters, Temple Church, today in the City of London. Temple Dinsley was in Preston, near Hitchin, on land where Princess Helena College now stands. The monastery-cum-fortified manor house hosted the ceremonies at which the majority of Englishmen joining the order were officially received as knights. It was also at Temple Dinsley that the Templars held many of their national chapter meetings, through which the order's activities across England were managed. On a day-to-day basis, the preceptory was probably home to members of the order who managed Templar land in the area and ensured the profits were safely transferred abroad. They would have acted much as any conventional lord of the manor, collecting rents from tenants who farmed the land which lay beyond the preceptory's walls, employing labourers and taking advantage of the fishing and hunting privileges the order had been granted. Since these privileges were extensive and the Templars enjoyed exemption from many taxes, it's likely there was friction between the order and the local community. Evidence suggests the Templars were fairer landlords than some, however. Crusader and Hitchin Lord of the Manor, Bernard de Balliol, gave land in the area to the Templars. He probably worshipped at Temple Dinsley and was eventually buried there. A worn and damaged stone effigy of a knight in armour with sword lying at rest under one of the windows of St Mary's Church in Hitchin is thought to be him, taken from his tomb. It's one of the very few objects that link to the old preceptory. Nothing of the building itself remains. A more lasting testament to the Templars' time in the county is Baldock. The creation of a new town here by the Templars was a money-making venture, and they chose their location well. By 1185, Baldock was a thriving market town and one of the order's most profitable sites in England. Thanks to its situation on both the main road north from London and the Icknield Way. The Templars encouraged merchants to relocate to the town with exemptions from market tolls and divided up the land around it into small plots for lease by tenant farmers, ensuring a steady stream of rental income. The order's handiwork is still evident in the town's layout, which retains a very wide high street, set aside for a marketplace. At the end of the high street, the parish church of St Mary's has a relic of the Templar era too. Although the church, built on the site by the order, was substantially redeveloped in the 14th and 15th centuries, part of the original chancel remains. The name of the town is also a link to the Templars' crusades. It is thought to derive from the old French word baldac, Baghdad. While Baldock and Preston are indisputably connected with the Templars, the county also has its share of the myth and speculation which so often surrounds the order. Under the streets of Royston is a man-made cavern, its walls covered with carvings. That it was once used by the Templars as a secret hideout remains a popular theory, particularly since some of the carvings appear to depict saints known to have been revered by the order. But as cave manager James Robinson says, any link with the Templars is purely in the realms of speculation. It's been the subject of conjecture since it was discovered in 1742 by workmen. Opinion has now shifted against any link with the Templars. Experts believe the carvings were created long after the order was disbanded. But where concrete evidence is lacking, there will always be room for speculation. And given the Templars' ultimate fate, it's tempting to believe they went underground in the face of persecution. It was primarily a malign propaganda campaign that led to the order's spectacular fall from grace in 1307, what historian Dan Jones has called medieval fake news. The Templars were accused of some of the blackest offences of their time, including corruption, blasphemy, and sexual crimes. This campaign would not have been so successful, however, if there had not been by this time growing dissatisfaction at its failure to keep the Crusader states in Christian hands. Deeply in debt to the Templars, King Philip IV of France ordered arrests, torture, and burning at the stake. In 1308, Edward II of England also ordered the arrest of Templars. Six were seized that year at Temple Dinsley. The preceptory itself was the subject of a subsequent inquiry, as it was rumoured to be the hiding place of much of the Templars' vast wealth. In fact, what wealth the Templars had in England was chiefly in the form of land and property, most of which was given away to a rival organisation, the Hospitallers, when the order was formally dissolved by Pope Clement V in 1312. Despite extensive searches, no treasure was found at Preston, nor has it been since. Although the rumour persists to this day, even the girls of Princess Helena College have been known to take a dip in the school pond looking for the fabled treasure. The Templars might be long gone from the county, but they've certainly never been forgotten. There are some great pictures accompanying this article. There's one of a 13th century miniature in some very jewel-like colours, that very jewel-like blue colour and reds and yellows. And it shows some weaponry used by the Knights Templar. Catapults, battle axes and maces, and a longbow and broadsword as well. And it's from the Crusader Bible, created around 1240. And there's also rather an intriguing and disturbing illustration as well of two Knights Templar being burnt at the stake on the Ile de Cité in Paris in March 1314, which is taken from the Grande Chronique de France.
We're nearing the end of this week's programme. It just remains for me to thank our contributors, Liz, Sarah, Elizabeth and Caroline, for reading the news, The Heart's Advertiser for providing it, and thanks to John for the radio listings, our friends at Wharfdale Talking News for the audio described TV listings, TNF Soundings for 10 Today, and Clive Davis of the Wildlife Sound Recording Society for the marvellous sounds of the corncrake. David read the events in history, and Sue presented famous birthdays. Finally, the Knights Templar story was read by Lucy. Steve will be here next week with News Extra, but that's all from me in November 2024. We close with Bright Nights by Searson. I hope you enjoy it. Goodbye for now, and keep well.